Good evening. My name is Anton Schoolworth, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to the symposium this evening, The Advancement of Clinical Practice in Chronic Kidney Disease. We have a distinguished panel here whom I'd like to introduce to you. We have Dr. William McClellan from Emory University School of Medicine. He is also Medical Director of the Medical Services Research at the Georgia Medical Care Foundation in Atlanta. Dr. Patrick Parfrey is a University Research Professor at Memorial University of Newfoundland in Canada. We have Dr. Amin Al-Ahmad, who is a cardiologist from Tufts University in Boston, and subbing for Dr. A.J. Singh, whose wife is about to or may have already delivered her child, Dr. Donal Redden, associate in medicine at Duke University. Dr. Redden is also the co-PI for the choir study, which is you'll hear more about from him this evening. I'd like now to introduce the co-moderator of the program, Dr. Klein Bolton, who's professor and chief of the Division of Nephrology at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville.
Thank you, Anton. And I'd like to extend my welcome as well to all of you for being here. We have an interesting program that I think is addressing a very pivotal area. I have some housekeeping things that I need to take care of first. First of all, would like to thank OrthoBiotech for the educational grant that's made it possible for us to get together and to discuss the advancement of clinical practice in chronic kidney disease. We're going to have a short question and answer session after each one of the presentations, and then there will be a panel discussion with all of us taking questions, and Dr. Parfrey has agreed to take all of the questions that nobody else can answer. And if you do have questions, please indicate them on your cards that you have, hand those out, and then they will be collected. We will not answer questions that we cannot read. So now I would like to go ahead with the program. My task in the next couple of minutes is an introduction, and I wanted to point out a couple of things that may be self-evident, but I think are extremely important. The first of these is that nephrologists and primary care physicians and the public alike think of dialysis as a life-saving therapeutic modality, which it is indeed. But while it's life-saving, it is not a panacea. This is looking at life expectancy for selected diseases at patients age 49 and 59. This is the remaining years. In yellow is the average United States life expectancy. Prostate cancer is in blue. Colon cancer is in red. Lung cancer is in light blue. And you'll see that even though we do indeed save patients from dying by putting them on some form of renal replacement therapy, that the overall outcomes are worse than any type of cancer other than lung cancer. So we have a long way to go. A major part of this process and the morbidity and the mortality associated with chronic kidney disease and with end-stage renal disease is cardiovascular disease, and that's the major killer. And we will be addressing that in multiple lectures that follow this. This is a slide which was adapted from Meyer and Levy. It shows the age and years of the United States general population here in yellow, and in green the dialysis population. This is a logarithmic scale here, and so there's approximately a 100-fold difference in the mortality rate in young people, which begins to approach the same point as they get older. What this means is that the cardiovascular mortality of a 25 or a 30-year-old person on dialysis with end-stage renal disease is the same as about a 70 or a 75-year-old person. This is certainly a grave concern. Recently, the National Kidney Foundation has put together a work group headed by Andy Levy. A number of us have participated in that, and it has been to define chronic kidney disease and to give us a starting place for intervening in the ravages of that disease. Part of what came out of that was a staging of chronic kidney disease and recommendation for clinical action. In this, the stages are listed, a description of the stages, the GFR, which is an estimated GFR from either an MDRD or a Cockcroft-Gault, and then the action that is suggested. I'm not going to address the action. I would point out there is no stage zero by CKD. That's my own designation, because these are patients that are at increased risk. They have a GFR which is normal, but they have some underlying risk factors for chronic kidney disease, such as diabetes or hypertension or family history or single kidney or what have you. Stage one are those patients with normal kidney function but with some evidence of kidney damage. Either they've had previous kidney damage or they may have proteinuria. Stage two is mild decrease in glomerular filtration rate, 60 to 89. This is the range that is frequently missed, but this is where things begin to happen. The data that's presented from the CKD clinical practice guideline shows that at 60, this is where hyperparathyroidism begins to occur, bone disease, anemia, and the ravages of end-stage renal disease begin to appear at this phase. This is when testing should be begun and screening for the anemia of renal disease and hyperparathyroidism, which most physicians don't realize is occurring at this point. Stage three is moderate decrease in GFR, 30 to 59. Stage four is a severe decrease in GFR, 15 to 29. And stage five is kidney failure, less than 15, followed then by renal replacement therapy. The current clinical practice guideline work committee for appropriate preparation for renal replacement therapy is addressing this, and there will be a talk later in the symposium describing the evidence as it is for this group of patients and the recommendations for intervention. One of the major things that has occurred because of that is a realization that chronic kidney disease is an epidemic, and worse than that, it's a hidden epidemic. We're used to dealing with stage five. We now, like the cancer folks and everybody else, have a staging. Stage five is our patients that are getting ready to go on dialysis or on dialysis. This is how many there are, looking in prevalence times 1,000. These are patients with clearances or GFRs between 15 and 29. 90% of these patients are going to progress to stage five and require renal replacement therapy. But this is the tip of the iceberg. Here we are at stage three, two, and one, and the total of these five stages makes up approximately 20 million people. Most of stage one and two are not detected. Even more alarming is that there's an additional 20-some million people who have some type of risk factor. We have no idea how many of this group will progress to one or to two or to three, but we do know that when they reach this point, it's downhill for the majority of the patients. It's also obvious that there needs to be some intervention earlier, and the alarming societal and financial cost of this has led to inclusion in Healthy People 2010 by Surgeon General Satcher of the first chapter on kidney diseases. The objective is to reduce the incidence, the morbidity, mortality, and health costs of chronic kidney disease by increasing screening, by increasing counseling for risk factors, treatment of underlying diseases such as diabetes and hypertension that are major causes of chronic kidney disease. Chronic kidney disease doesn't start when the patient gets on dialysis, and the complications of end-stage renal disease don't start when the patient gets on dialysis. It occurs much sooner, and the current National Kidney Foundation work groups addressed at many different areas are looking at trying to impact this early relationship, because this is where the changes are going to occur that have a beneficial effect for patients on dialysis. This is a diagram that I put together that's going to be coming out in postgraduate medicine, kidney care recommendation, and it sort of, in cartoon form, represents the primary care physician and the amount of input that they have with the patient with chronic kidney disease. Most of those referrals occur for specific reasons, such as proteinuria or hematuria. But actually, as you go down through here, there's a need for more and more intervention and more interaction between the nephrologist or for the nephrology team in taking care of these patients in preparation for renal replacement therapy. And the complications that we're going to talk about today and the problems that are going to be addressed are up in here, and we have to intervene at a much earlier stage. And the speakers that follow me that are going to provide you with information regarding their areas are going to give you evidence that this is where things are happening and give you some ideas about what the rationale is for intervention that we can take. They'll also point out to you that there's the need for additional studies to provide the evidence that's necessary for us to go forward and make the intervention that will end up helping our patients and improving our outcomes for these patients.